Okay. So we've got 37 minutes until the alarm goes off. How should we use it? Let's do a little bit of reflection. I invite you to do a little mind experiment with me. Let's suppose that you've just been told that you have 10 years to live. Yeah. It's quite a lot of time. That's a whole decade. 10 years is a good chunk of time. But at the end of 10 years, the alarm will go off, and that will be it. Yeah. So let's just have a little think about these 10 years that we've got. Knowing that we have 10 years, is that going to make any difference to how we're living our life at the moment? Does it change our priorities in any way? So we've got till the end of October 2023. Is there anything particularly we want to achieve in that time? Ten years is long enough to develop a new skill or go somewhere different. Work on developing a quality or two. Are we on the track in our life that we're happy to pursue for these 10 years? This perspective of 10 years, change anything about how we work, how we relate to our family, just take another couple of minutes. Okay. So doing an exercise like that just makes us aware of the fact that our time is finite and that it's precious. Those two things. And if we hold those two things, then we start thinking, well, how do I want to live? How do I want to, my relationships to be? How do I want to, where do I want to get to? And that helps. That helps cut out an awful lot of sidetracks and meanderings and prevarication and all that we do. It also cuts through, sometimes it cuts through the sort of fallacies that we have. Sometimes we have almost kind of magical thinking about our lives. I remember about 25 years ago, I heard that my father had got cancer. And part of me, you know, I'd been a Buddhist for quite a long time by that point, so part of me was going, oh yes, well everything's impermanent. But another part of me just felt distraught, and it was like this sort of childish part of me that seemed to believe that anyone who was really close to me was sort of magically protected, that nothing terrible could happen to them, that just, you know, those things happened to people over there, it didn't happen to you know, these people who were kind of close to me. And yeah, sort of I kind of found that whole kind of view sort of there. I hadn't been aware of it. I didn't know that I got it. But even if we think of ourselves as very rational people and people who've been, you know, kind of practicing the Dharma, you can find these sorts of things sometimes, sort of views kind of half kind of hidden away. Like you might feel that you're kind of protected because you still have something very important to do. You've still got children to bring up. You've still got some project that you've got a book that you're trying to finish, or a symphony that you're trying to finish. I don't know if Schubert felt like that. So, yeah. But actually, does that protect you? Why should it protect you? People with children do die. People who are writing books, get to page 47. So these things happen. So it's quite interesting, just if you put some kind of a definite limit on it, it starts to bring to the surface those sorts of little bits of views that we've got. And it also makes us aware that, whatever we want to do, the time really is now. The time to start planning is now. I sometimes think people who live sort of very kind of good, healthy sort of Dharma lives, I think for some of us there's a sort of sense that, if I do enough yoga and if I eat really enough kind of broccoli and blueberries and all that sort of thing, and I do lots of meditation, somehow I may not live forever, but I'll live for so long that sort of death sort of disappears safely over the horizon. But there are no guarantees, and sooner or later something will get you. So by all means, let's do yoga, let's do qigong, let's live healthily, let's eat well, and enjoy all that. But let's not do it to kind of cheat death, as it were, because death will cheat us eventually. Yeah. But you can just catch sometimes these little kind of views that are there. So if you kind of put a definite horizon to your life and just feel how that feels, because there will be a definite horizon, we just don't know when it is. Maybe 10 years, it may be 30 years, it may be 50 years, it may be 5 years. We actually don't know. But doing that just kind of brings everything into focus. It doesn't just kind of leave a sort of open field in which we can meander from here to there and back again. We're aware that each evening that we spend doing this, we're not spending doing that. Somehow we haven't just got sort of endless worlds and time. And the more we reflect on impermanence and death, although to start with it can be a bit, oh dear, I had a full day and then I came to the Buddhist Centre and Vasantra went on about death. As time goes on, you get more used to the idea. You just kind of, and it starts to become more natural. And because in some aspects of the West it is so, it's put in such an unnatural place. A friend of mine's a doctor, and he talks about some of his friends who are hospital doctors who are kind of personally affronted that their patients died, which is a bit crazy, really, when you think about it. Given that we're all going to die sooner or later. So if you reflect on death, it just starts to become more natural somehow. It just becomes more of a natural part of life, which is what it is. I remember a few years ago, I went to a funeral of somebody in my family the usual thing of the, you go to the crematorium and the coffin sort of disappears and who knows what's happened. And then not long after that, I was out in India and I went up to Darjeeling and Kalimpong in that area. And I went to a place called Goom, which is where there's a monastery of which Dada Rinpoche, one of Sankaracharya's teachers, he was the abbot. And I was travelling with my friend Arthur Darshan, who died a few years later. And we got to Goom and to the monastery, and we went in, and there's a wonderful big statue of Maitreya, which Lama Govinda writes about in The Way of the White Clouds. And so we were in there, so doing a little bit of meditation. And then one of the young monks came running in and sort of picked up a conch shell and rushed out and started blowing it. So we finished our meditation. We thought, what was all that about? So we went out, and there was a funeral party carrying a body of an elderly Gurkha guy down to a place just below the temple. So we sort of went and followed them down and stood at what we hoped was a respectful distance. And I kind of got my mala out, so it looked like I was a Buddhist and I wasn't just a kind of tourist, sort of. So I was also just doing mantras, for the person who died and for their family. And, so it was like a sort of open bandstand sort of arrangement with some wood that they got together. But Goom is very, kind of like its name suggests, it's sort of several thousand feet up and it's kind of misty, and you hardly ever see the Himalayas from there because the mists come down a lot of the time. So it was quite, it was cold and it was a bit damp and there was a mist. So anyway, they went through a little ritual and then they put the body of this guy, this old man, on the pyre. And they got some old car tyres to help the thing sort of get going. And they were very good at lighting fires, even in goomish conditions. And so they lit the fire. And after a bit, some of the young men, sort of relatives, came over to Arthur Darshan and I, and we started talking. And they invited us over. So we sort of joined the sort of, the funeral party that was going on. And once the body was blazing quite well, it sort of, the atmosphere sort of changed. It got quite sort of light. And it was cold, the wind was sort of coming straight down from Kanchenjunga. It was really cold. So we got invited to sit down on a log in what was kind of like the sort of seat of honour, which was just sort of close to the fire. And so we were talking to some of these young relatives of the deceased. And then somebody turned up with chai. And so after about half an hour, it just seemed like the most natural thing in the world. There you are, the wind's blowing from the mountains and it's really cold. And so you warm your hands at the fire and you talk, you make friends and connections with people and you hold your chai because that keeps your hands warm as well and you're drinking it. And so there's sort of friendship and there's sort of the natural human things that you do. You drink, you keep warm, and you die. And up there there's the body of this old man, just gradually kind of disintegrating in the fire. And nobody felt bothered, if you know what I mean. Yes, they were sad that their uncle or whoever it was had died. But it was just, it was just part of life. It was just very, very natural. And that had a really, really good effect on me, particularly after this sort of other kind of funeral that I'd been to, which just felt like somehow, it was like something, a mistake had happened. Someone had died, that shouldn't have happened somehow. And it was all a bit sort of unfortunate and slightly shameful and sort of needed to be kept over there. Oh, dear, oh, dear. It was, this going to Goom. It was a real gift just to have that experience. I thought, that's kind of how we should be relating to death, really. That's much more like it. Let's do another of those little reflections. Go on, I'll push you. How long should we have this time? Don't say 30 years. How about 3? 3 years? Oh, you're a hard man. Ooh. Now let's say 3. I need 3. Okay, so same thing. So now, where are we? So we got until October 2016. So we've got 3 winters and 3 summers. So where are we going to be? What are we going to do? You're just going to stay put and carry on as you are? Going to sell a whole lot of stuff, do that round the world cruise and go through some of your bucket list? A bucket list, if anyone doesn't know, is a list of things that you kind of want to do before you die. Okay. So it's valuable information just to see what comes up when we look like that. It's also interesting to look at our mind and see what it does when we're asked to contemplate something like this. And sometimes it basically doesn't play and kind of finds ways around it. But I think the general effect is that it kind of does, it has quite an earthing effect on us. It's a sense of being more, a little bit more grounded in our lives. Any comments? Anything anybody wants to say? Any questions?
Mm. So you can imagine it, but you also say to yourself, I don't actually know that. So there's kind of get out clause in your mind as to when you're reflecting.
Yeah. Well, all we can do really is just kind of put ourselves into it as best we can in imagination and just sort of play the game. But yeah, because we've usually got get out clauses with these things. Yeah. That whole sort of shifting focus is very interesting, isn't it? It's like I've been kind of working with this sort of reflection for a while now, and a lot of the time I just take a year. But also, yeah, a few months ago, I remember I went on one of my excursions on the net, which may or may not have been the best use of my time. I went on a site which is like a kind of actuarial site where they'd give you, you know, the best statistical probability of how long you'll be around for. So I was going to be around till I was 82, I think. So I could think, oh, right, I've got till I'm 82, so another 53 years, so that's fantastic, or something like that. So do I take that? You know, that's what they're telling me is the most likely kind of time span I've got. So do I work with that? But actually, how much of that would be useful time? You know, I might be, who knows? You know, not functioning very well before 82. Yeah. So I think it's good to, actually quite good to work with different focuses and see. There's a book by Stephen Levine called A Year to Live, which I don't think is a fantastic book in some ways, but I think it's a fantastic idea. You know, I sometimes thought I'd like to get together a group of people and just kind of work on the assumption, you know, we'll pick a date and work on the assumption we've got a year. And just see, you know, really put ourselves into that as best we can without necessarily, you know, kind of selling up and whatever, you know, but really just feeling like, okay, now there's 11 months to go, 10 months to go. I think that'd be a really good practice.
I found myself reflecting on my own death by accident. It felt I think it wasn't the 10 years one, but I was like, it would be good to do something to generate a bit of, I think I was thinking about creating a kind of social, no, like economic, sustainable economic situation for my mother. Yeah. I thought like, I haven't done much for my mother, but yeah. It would be good if I set up a business or something that kind of, that she can live after I'm gone.
Yeah.
And then that made me think, oh, I died before my mum. She's going to be, she's not going to like that.
Yeah.
And then that then made me think about that. Oh, shanks. I'm going to die. So even though I was working on that, I have X years.
Yeah.
It was just all that kind of mental, like, oh, kind of how I'm going to plan my life.
Yeah.
But on that, I guess that's what I want to say. I found myself reflecting about my own death, and actually that changed the whole relation about the exercise, because I was like, I started to feel fear, and then I didn't want to go there, as you said. And,
right.
Which sometimes, I could feel like, oh yes, I know that I'm going to die. It's like, I'm going to die in 10 years, so I can organize it, and I see my values, and I see what I'm doing with my life. But then, it went to another place where it actually started to be scary.
Right,
and unpleasant.
Yeah.
By accident.
that's usually the only way we get there, isn't it? Because we're, that thing about dying before. There's a Zen story about someone who goes to a Zen master and asks for a blessing. So the master writes does some calligraphy, and it says, grandparents die, parents die, children die, and he hands it to the guy, and the guy goes, what sort of blessing is that? And the master says, well, you know, if those things happen in that natural order, that will be a real blessing. If the grandparents die first, and then the parents, then the children, that will be a blessing. So I think when you bump into that sort of fear, you know, whether it's deliberately or by accident, it's good to kind of sit with it. You don't have to sort of push into it. You'll bounce out, and that will, you know, it will make it harder. But you just kind of sort of sit. It's a bit like kind of when if you practice something like yoga, they talk about, you know, you just kind of go, you kind of play with that sort of edge, where there's a stretch, but. It's not too much. So with this kind of thing, you find that point where it's just a bit of a stretch. You know, you're just taking yourself out of a kind of comfortable place, but you're not, you know, really sort of rubbing your nose in it, because your mind will, as I say, it will just kind of create more defences against going there, which isn't what we're trying to do. We're trying to lead it gently into that position. Okay, so you get the idea. There's a balance. There's really, when we get this right, that sense that life isn't going to last forever makes us appreciate what's here more. Yeah? It makes us appreciate the value. You know, it makes us appreciate the fact that we could come together on an evening like this. It makes us appreciate. It also makes us appreciate the fact that. We are all quite sort of fragile and vulnerable. You know, it's like if we do that 10-year exercise, actually, you know, if we could have a 10-year reunion of the Vasantara, you know, whatever, you know, autumn Cambridge Buddhist Centre course, probably we wouldn't all be here. Maybe I won't be here. We just don't know. Yeah. So, but if we don't let that spook us, if we just let that help us to appreciate the fact that here we are now and how wonderful that is, you know, that there are all these people and that we can benefit from them, we can interact with them, we can practice together. That's quite special. So these reflections, we have to find ways in which they are actually motivating for us. Not just kind of things which we're supposed to do, you know, which actually just kind of send us kind of running off in the wrong direction. Yeah. But if we find the right approach, which is usually quite a light touch, you need to have a light touch with these things. If it all becomes very kind of, oh, you know, this my human life is incredibly precious and I must really use every moment, really. That's not it. It's just kind of feeling, hey, isn't it amazing that this is happening now? Isn't it amazing that, you know, we can see? Isn't it amazing that we can feel, that we can have open hearts, that we can care about one another? Isn't it amazing that we can empathize with one another? Yeah. And with the impermanence and death thing, yeah, everything flows, everything changes. Isn't that amazing? Because if it didn't, that would be weird. That would be really strange. So yeah, no, but given that that's no, that's ghastly. Yeah, actually, no, that kind of natural flow, that natural change in life, yeah, that's good, that's fine. And yeah, it will, some things will come to an end, but actually there will always be something new, yeah. There's always transformation. There's always something happening beyond that. So, yeah, and to do this kind of work, it helps if we can keep in touch with metta. That gives us a sort of emotional reserve, an emotional reservoir that we can then kind of work in this area. So, how should we spend the rest of our time together? Well, I really hope to see you again next week, and I'm going to stop this around. So, yeah, have a very good week. May we all meet again. I've appreciated the fact that we could meet this evening. And next week we'll look at